I will do this quick and we'll get into it. All right. Welcome to this episode of Jords and Rolls Like That. I'm one of your hosts, Kyle Overkill. I'm going, I think, solo today. With everything going on, sometimes we may not work out times. I think we've talked about it before. I'm East Coast, Tim is West Coast, so we're usually coordinating when my kids are asleep and he's getting home from work. So I don't know. The state could be on fire for all I know at sometimes when I talk to him, which is disappointing because we had planned everything out. We were going to talk about the episode of George Lopez where George has to go to a school assembly. He gets tricked into it by Angie, but he finds out it's only for parents who didn't go to college, but George doesn't want to go because he thinks college is a waste of time and he's boasted by his own success at the factory. It then devolves where I think he has to go back to school, but bummed every time we plan this we're not able to do it, but luckily we actually have a really good show today. We're going to be talking to a creator for one of my new favorite books, Mason Mooney, Paranormal Investigator, joined by the creator, Sierra Miller. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good.
I was aware of this book because I think, was it Flying Eye is an imprint of No Brow, right?
I'm pretty sure. Right.
And I like, No Brow is one of my favorites. I'm like obsessed with some publishers who just, because I, at this point in my life, I do less floppies because of space and just, I don't have it. So I've then filled up with that other space with hardcovers and omnibuses and collections, which, so in reality, it hasn't done anything, but, it, like, I can pass that to my wife. She thinks it's better. But so I'm like really into like nice collections and nice books, and like No Brow like puts out some beautiful books. I think they did Fantasy Sports, which is one of my favorites.
They did. That's one of my favorites too.
Oh, so beautiful. Yeah. Me and my, he's six when we were reading it, but we went through them. He loves them. I was aware of Flying Eye, and then I saw something posted for Mason Mooney, and I was like, this looks amazing. And then I've talked about it before, I always feel bad bringing, I know some people's your first time listening, but Kate, like on weekends I work at Barnes Noble just for a discount, and to be working in a bookstore, I enjoy it. And it was like, I remember when it came in and it was on the shelf, and I was like, oh man, my kid, like, this is something fun for us to read. And then I bought it and I was reading on my break, and I'm like, this is too nice for him to like give him, like, I don't want him to have this and ruin it with his dirty kid hands. So he's getting a second one for himself to keep in his room, because he does like the little kid thing where he, like, you know, he puts it in his pocket and he's rolling it up and he reads them like 50 times, which is cool, but at the same time, like, that's not where we read books. So, like I said, I instantly, like, the cover is amazing. Like, I just picked it up, I read it in one sitting, I've gone back to it. It's so much fun. Like, it's really beautiful to look out, and I think it's a familiar concept. I'm like a big fan of, you know, kids investigating things, like Eerie Indiana growing up was huge for me, Monster Squad, which is better than Goonies, and like all these things. How did this idea come about for you, for kind of a kid paranormal investigator? And then we can spoil it a little bit, I think, but there's like kind of a little twist on his approach to it and kind of the normal hero type character in these settings.
Yeah. I totally am into, like, I love like ghost shows and just all kinds of paranormal stuff. Like, I always have since I was a kid. And so for my thesis project for art school, I was going to do kind of this book of like scary stories with like facts about cryptids and stuff. And my thesis mentor, I was like, well, you need like some kind of a narrator or whatever to go into it. And so Mason just kind of came about for like that purpose. And then that project got sent to Flying Eye, and they were like, oh, we like really love this character. Like, we don't care about all your other stuff in this book. We just like this character. So it kind of evolved from there. And like, I love like kind of embarrassingly like ghost adventures and like Zach Bagans and all that sort of thing, and I just thought that would be kind of like a fun idea to do like this world of like competing paranormal investigators.
So for this first one, was that something then kind of when the like approach to do more with him specifically? Was that something you had built out, or you already had this kind of idea for this like first adventure, kind of introducing the world and stuff like that? Or was that something you built out when they kind of came back to you with that?
Yeah, I really just kind of had the character. Like, I knew his heart was in a jar and that he wanted to be a paranormal investigator, and that was kind of it. So yeah, it really came about after they're like, well, what would you do with this character? And then I was like kind of scrambling, like, okay, let's come up with like a plot of what he could do. And yeah, so it was definitely like building the story around him and that idea.
Was that I've seen the I think it's the he's sitting in a chair with so like moss around him. Was that prior? Was that something early on, or is that something you had done for him while you were working on this? I think there's like an image. I think it's on your site, I think.
It was for a children's book class that I had actually with Victoria Jameson, who does like Roller Girl, and she's really great too. But the project was to like just design a character for a kid's book, and so yeah, I just kind of thought about, I don't know, it wasn't like there wasn't a lot of thought about him at that point, just that he was just the grumpy kid, and probably because he didn't have his heart in his chest anymore. And so I liked like the design of the character, and I was like, oh, I'll just put this character that I like the design of into my thesis project. So that was, I think, probably the first drawing of Mason really that I made.
So yeah, he hasn't changed much. I was looking at, I mean, character design wise, I think it's fairly close to that, and which is I think saying a lot. Obviously, like kind of the appeal of him is it is very kind of a distinct look and silhouette. I think you clearly kind of get his mood, like just by his design. I think kind of the way you've structured the face, even kind of like angling his eyes, and like he just looks like a little grumpy kid in his like adorable blazer and shorts. And then obviously, like I didn't put it together till I was reading it, and then I was like, holy shit, that's so like subtle and great. With the him essentially being heartless, that like you know he's has his heart in a jar, and then that kind of playing into his mood and motivations, but also like the lack of fear. That was so brilliant for like a piece of this character design as well.
Thank you. Yeah. Everybody told me too that his shorts were too short, and I was like, no, they have to be
No, they're
that
not.
short.
I know that it, for humor, it goes the opposite. Shorter is funnier.
Right.
Can't go long. Shorter and then longer socks. It was like
Yes.
I had a well I had I still have a younger brother, but he was like real into like shorts and like baseball socks pulled up like past his knees, and he thought it was the coolest thing. I was like,
It's a good
oh
look, like old
yeah
basketball players and stuff. I'm
yeah
like, they should have stuck with that look.
So, he and I like we were talking a little before, I think his character is so unique again because he's I mean, I think we could argue a little of Iris being maybe the real like hero or protagonist, at least in this kind of story or to him. But for kind of a namesake character in it, like so interesting because again, he is very, I mean, grumpy's a good word, but also kind of just like standoffish, and you know, he's kind of driven by his motivations to like upstage this rival group and then kind of prove. Ghosts exist and monsters. So he just has like a he has such a unique personality, to for an all ages book, but also as kind of a hero. Is that something that's difficult to kind of balance that mood for a character? Obviously, you don't want him to be like so unique to make him unlikable, but unlikable in a way that he is likable. Like he's so charming because he is kind of like standoffish.
Yeah, well, I definitely think, he's just so like insecure and is just trying to cover that up, which, I thought is hopefully something that a lot of people can relate to. I think we've all like kind of covered our insecurity by lashing out a little bit, and that's totally Mason. And I think you're right that Iris is really the protagonist in a lot of ways. Kind of like I thought about it like, to be a little bit geeky, like in Doctor Who, like the doctor isn't really like the main character. It's usually like his companion, It's like you need somebody to kind of identify with, and then to, like, you know, ground this, like, kind of crazy magical person, which I think gave me a little bit more leeway to let Mason be kind of a jerk in some ways, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think it was important that, like, if Iris, this, like, super sweet, like, really great character, could find good in Mason, then I, you know, hope that the audience could too.
Right. I think, and I think that's so key, because, like, she's kind of on the opposite end, where she's, you know, so positive and so likable and so adorable, that her not being put off by Mason is, like, kind of gives you a sense as a reader, like, because a lot of the book, I think, is coming through her eyes, like, that, okay, like, this kid is, you know, well-intentioned and good-hearted, and so she's willing to be on board with this adventure, especially, I think, in the moment later when she comes back to him and kind of reassures him that, like, it's such a reinforcer, especially kind of, again, obviously, as an, I think, as, you know, adult, you can read into things, but coming into his protect, like, an all-ages perspective, like, that is, like, a clear, I think, through line for any reader of any age to kind of understand that and then kind of get on board with him.
Yeah.
Is, so, like, kind of mentioned, like, him being, I think, like, originally a narrator or something like that. And I think what's so interesting about this book, as well as kind of your, the dual narration and the differences that kind of carry it throughout. Like, there's a kind of omniscient narrator, then there's, you know, Mason, there's, and it kind of pushes the story, and I enjoy, like, the breakup of that, like, the kind of narration parts, but also, like, kind of classic panels and bubbles and everything like that. Was that something you knew kind of early on you wanted to approach with it, and is that easy to divvy out kind of what works for the story, when's, like, a good, I think what's really well works really well, as well as when you do the narration on kind of, like, the full pages, and you're able to kind of then sell the images visually narrating the page and then kind of lay it over with additional narration, which a lot of the humors is really pulled off of the narration as well, I think.
Yeah, so the narration was actually a really hard part of writing the story, of figuring out like, how that was going to fit in, and, like, should we have a narrator? But so initially, when Flying Eye came to me and they wanted to do the book, they were like, we kind of want to do this hybrid of comics and a picture book, which is where you get, like, the full page spreads and stuff. But to me, it felt like those pages needed, like, a narrator. And so trying to decide, like, who that was going to be was really hard. And so, like, at one point I kind of had, like, this unsolved mysteries thing where I was basically, like, Robert Stack with, like, my cat, and it was, like, really, like, weird, and it didn't quite work. It was just, like, too many elements going on and questions of, like, well, do I know Mason Mooney personally, or, like, you know, how does that work? So eventually we're just like, you know, we don't really need to explain the narrator. Me and my editor were like, we can just, like, it is me, it's my voice, you know, as ridiculous as it is, it's often kind of who I am, and stuff, but we're like, we don't really need to, like, explain who this is, like, it can just be a narrator, and it works, you know, like, I don't think there's too many questions about, like, who this person is, but yeah, it was, I think, really important to break up the story with that and kind of explain maybe some of the concepts that, like, kids might not know about paranormal stuff, or, you know, and just to also, like, give a little bit more insight into Mason, because once again, like, you know, he's so grumpy and stuff, but to, like, stop and have the narrator maybe make it a little bit clearer that, like, he's, you know, feeling bad here, or, you know, like, what he's thinking, so that it's not just all him being grumpy.
I think you use it so well for kind of pacing purposes, and also, again, I think for a kind of intro to this character in this world, like, obviously you kind of want to avoid, well, you info dubs in the sense where they're, like, tedious, but, like, having them kind of broken up with the narrator and these full, like, pages or these kind of unique set pieces you do. Like it almost feels like it does feel like a almost like a cartoon and kind of like a cutaway to like a gag and kind of explaining it. And so it's like really fun when you're in that moment and then you kind of like cut back to the story and it like I think it paces it so well when you're reading it to have those moments. And I mean I agree. I love when something is just not explained because then it just like reinforces kind of the sincerity of it and the expectation when you go into something like this is what it is, and it sells the humor even more when there's not like an explanation to it. Like it's just like it's gen it, like I genuinely thought it was hilarious, the narration and kind of like my style of humor, and I love that again, kind of just not explaining things and it is what it is, and then you kind of have to accept that the creator knows best, and they generally do, and that's where you're kind of going along for that ride, and just by being in that, you're able to kind of throw yourself into this world.
Well, thanks. Yeah, that's great to hear. Took a long time to get it there, so I'm glad that it paid off.
I've been trying to explore more of the kind of all ages work, because it's so obviously so interesting to me, and as someone who with kids, but not only that, like, growing up and still as, a 30-year-old now, like I l like watching cartoons, like I love all that type of stuff. So I don't know why it would be any different to enjoy kind of like these books that are essentially that. Like they're just books for everyone, and like the good cartoons are the ones that like adults and kids alike can kind of sit and enjoy, and there's something for everyone. And I think there's so many great all ages books that do that. And obviously this is one of them. But I think the kind of creation process is a little different than kind of like single issues and stuff we see from like Diamond distributed stuff. And there's like a lot of time and planning that goes ahead of it. Is it something like early on when you were working with Flying Eye, like for pacing wise, did you know like kind of what they wanted for page counts and what you were working with that to kind of get that? Did you know like what you wanted to do for length of story?
Yeah, so because they wanted to do this like hybrid of comics and picture books, they already had the Brownstone series. I don't know if you've read that. It's like Arthur and the Golden Rope, that sort of
Oh, yep.
thing. And like the Hilda books, that sort of, oversized comic. So they had an idea of kind of what it wanted to be, and they gave me the page count, which was like, I don't know how much it actually ended up being, how many pages, but I think it was like 78 pages is what they told me, which was by far the biggest comic I had ever done. I think I'd only done like a 10-page comic at that point. So it was definitely a process of like figuring out like how much content do I need to create to like fit into those pages, and like how big can the story be, kind of, and so it was definitely a lot of trial and error and making outlines and stuff. And really, the book I think could have like been like 150 pages. It was a lot of cutting out like just scenes that I wanted to do for fun but didn't really like move the story along. I kind of lost my train of thought there, what I was talking about, but hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, and like I think that's the like key to the success of it is again like I read it in one sitting because I was having so much fun and I think it's paced perfectly. Like there's no like kind of ups and downs. Like it is like start to finish a like a go, but at the same time like when it was over I was like instantly like I wish there was more. I want more, and I love the preview you have in the final part talking about that as well. And I think that's kind of like a perfect example of like knowing kind of or not know like of it working because like it didn't feel bloated, but at the same time I wanted more and like to kind of juggle that. I have to imagine it's difficult as a creator. Like again, kind of there's so much you could throw into it. But like kind of knowing what would actually work and what is eventually going to weigh it down, it would be tough to know until I think you have it figured out. Obviously, working with editors and stuff, but I think for this specifically, I think you nailed it.
Thank you. Yeah.
Is and you mentioned Hilda, and I know you worked, you illustrated the prose ones, correct? I think.
I did, yeah.
This again, obviously, I think that kind of those are the first real ones that I've seen, or at least seem to be fairly popular at this kind of oversized size that they've really pushed, which again I love. We have all of them, and again they really stand out, especially because I know this specifically is in. It's not in the graphic novel section. It is actually in the. They have it in the regular young reader section. So
Oh, that's
like
cool.
stay. Yeah, so it's st like it stands out, like it's in, like it towers over everything else. And again, like I love this size for these books, especially kind of the way you approach them with a lot of the full pages and kind of the full splash pages as well. Is that something you knew with the size it was going to be at, something similar to Hilda, that you could kind of work in that more with how you were approaching the pages?
Yeah, I definitely had a copy of like I think the first three Hilda books and stuff on my desk as I was making this, just thinking about like, panel size and like, kind of how to use those big splash pages to like make the most impact, and like really like kind of like stop the reader and just yeah, because I think that there is like so much economy of the page in those bigger books and stuff. And so you can do more with like smaller panels, I think, than you can in like kind of your standard comic page. So there's like you're able to fit like more detail and stuff in there, which is I was really grateful for and like happy to, I think in some places I probably get a little carried away at all the detail work and stuff, but that's something I really love and was important to me to make Mason's world like really feel rich and lived in and stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, that, I love that the shot of him at his desk and like the amount of things and detail on it. Because again, it really sets them like just from that page, like you can see who this kid is, and like it's all done with. I mean, there's obviously narration, but if you didn't even see that, like you would get his demeanor, the way he's poised and sitting, and then obviously kind of just everything that's on the desk. And this is something we. I think it was before we actually started, but like I think, again, kind of getting people to not necessarily understand, but just the nuance that goes into to illustration and creating a style and tone, and like I think people could come to this and see like the character design, which versus like a like a I'm trying to think of someone who's ultra hyper realistic or something like that, like versus like your approach to Mason is like is more graphic and more about kind of this like silhouettes and the very distinct like state or shapes and styles and acting. But then like in addition to that, like ultra detailed backgrounds and still kind of having that simplicity to it, which I've seen the argument recently. I don't remember what it was on Twitter, but the like idea of simplicity using it, like it's not a correct descriptor. I don't know if that makes sense, but like the kind of nuance in that, like the amount of work that actually goes into, I think, simplifying designs for the sake of telling a story is there's a lot of work and thought that goes into that, like. Not that it doesn't go into realistic stuff, but like I think there's like such a nuance to know what is going to work versus a lot of times being hyper realistic where you're kind of at that point putting less on the reader because at that point like I think like it doesn't play with the imagination as much, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I'm always drawn to like really like graphic illustration work and stuff. Yeah, I think, I think I had an art teacher once tell me that basically you're kind of using like symbols almost when you do it really graphically, like a smiley face or something, something that like you're able to tell right away what's happening. Like you don't have to read a lot of nuance and stuff into kind of that style, if that makes sense. And so I really kind of always took that to heart of like, you can tell so many emotions and stuff with really very few lines, and I really like that, but I also, and I think too, like with character designs and stuff, there's just like really simple shapes and stuff that can tell you so much, and more so than, you know, like a really highly detailed face and stuff. Like you might not be able to tell if that person is like good or bad and stuff, but when you get into like really graphic illustrations and stuff, those shapes can tell you so much, you know, with just a glance. And so I really like trying to work with that and, you know, figure that out and make it easy for the reader, I guess.
Yeah, and I think, again, I think that, especially with a story like this, obviously, I think it helps with a medium like comics and illustration or even picture books. Like, it helps build in kind of the imagination and engagement of it. Or, like, I think sometimes, like, that, if you look at, like, a prose book, you can really play with the people's imagination because you're feeding them the ideas of it. And then, like, I think that's why horror works so well in prose a lot of times, because, like, at that point, you whatever you imagine is going to be scarier than anything you visually see. So it really helps to do that. And I think a lot of times in stories like this, or humor, or even horror comics, I think that's where it kind of excels as well, is leaving that up to the reader to kind of run with it and accept shapes and symbols, and then really kind of sells it further, and you can really kind of play with it more as you read it, versus like a superhero book where there's like a static, you know, punches on page and stuff like that at times. I always think of, I don't remember what, it was one of my art classes. I was drawing my sister when I was growing up, and the art teacher was like, "She looks like she's 100, Kyle, because you put a million lines on her face." And I was like, "I'm trying to get it, like, she has all these lines." And he's like, you don't have to do that. Like, you can really get what you see versus kind of like what's there, and then that will really sell it at sometimes.
That's so true. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I've heard that thing before too, where I think somebody told me that like every line you put on a face adds like 5 years or something. So, yeah.
What are you working in for this? Because I love, one of my favorite things about the book is the amount of, like, kind of texture and feel there is to the book, especially kind of in the backgrounds, but even on things like his blazer, and a lot of it, there's such a tactility to it, like, this, because of kind of your approach to that. What are you using for the creation of this?
Yeah, so it is all digital art. You know, I kind of came to digital art pretty late in my art life or whatever. And so I was really intimidated by it. And so I wanted to keep it as simple as possible. So I basically just have like pencil or whatever that looks like a real pencil and just colored it all like you would with a colored pencil, which was a ton of work. I knew it was going to be a ton of work when I did it, but I just, you know, really like liked kind of like the natural feel of it. Like it just, you know, I wanted it to kind of have that handmade look to it and stuff. You know, I had friends that were like, you should just like make it like a background and then you could just like reuse it over and over. And I was like, no, I want all the textures to look different and stuff. So it was a little crazy to do it that way. And I'm working on the second one and I'm like, oh my gosh, why am I doing this to myself? But I think, you know, once you get past the pain and stuff, I really like how it looks. Like I think it kind of gives it something extra, you know, to have that texture, hopefully. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I especially, I think in the background specifically, like, I'm looking at the Paranormal Society page, and if it was just, I mean, it obviously it would look great if it was still just like flat black background, but that gives just like such a depth to the page when you're looking at it, and you can kind of see the scratchiness, but also kind of like there's like the undertones of like what that would be the page under it. Like, it looks so great. I think it just helps kind of give a depth of field to it and kind of push the images forward. And then, oh, I forgot that there's the picture of him laying down, and they come in. It's so good. Yeah, for the humor of the book, was that something, we touched a little bit on it, but like, again, and it's something difficult in any medium to kind of get across, but then also to have something that's going to kind of work on every level. Like, what was your approach to that to make it work? Was it, and I think I've seen this a lot where it is, you know, if it's funny to me, that's going to be something that's works, versus like trying to make it funny? Is that kind of what you were doing? I know you said the narrator is a little bit of your voice.
Yeah, it's definitely. I mean, I love like especially like humor and horror. Like I love like Fright Night or, you know, kind of like things that can be scary but also funny. And so I definitely knew I wanted it to be really funny, hopefully. And yeah, and just trying to, I don't know, you know, it's like hard to try to tell a joke and stuff, but I just basically wrote it for me in my voice of what, like, sort of things I think are funny. And, like, I think, you know, like, teens that are trying to be, like, dreamy and handsome are funny. And, you know, hopefully other people do, too. And I love, like probably my favorite character in the book is her older sister, who is just, like, so awful to them, you know.
Right.
Apparently, I think people that are awful are funny because there's a lot of that going on in this book. But, and something that I worked really hard on and hopefully came across was, like, working on kind of like the words that I used, if that makes sense, to, you know, like add some character to it, like kind of like weird old timey slang or, you know, kind of out of date slang and stuff for them. Like, I think, you know, he calls him like a dreamboat at some point, you know, like I just try to, especially like the parts where you're just like explaining what's going on and everything, I just tried to jazz it up with like weird,
Well, I think of, yeah. I know one we were watching, I think you did the, was it the Green Books or when you were, you read it?
Oh, yeah, yeah, the Green Bean Books, yeah.
Yeah, I watched that with my son and he got such a kick out of Tushy. Like,
yeah, yeah, exactly.
Again, it kind of sells like those. Yeah, I think the she's my favorite. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I love, and again, I love, and it really sells kind of Iris, where again he is very like standoffish to her, and then her older sister again, who's generally like throughout the book not helpful or I don't want to say kind, because obviously like, you know, brother sister relationship, but it's even something later where I think like. He calls it out, like, you know, she hasn't really been nice to me since I got here, like, should we save her? And like, you know, Iris is just like driven as to like either find the goodness or at least be proactive and good in the situation to do that. And isn't like, that's kind of where, you know, she not only steals the show, but she acts kind of as the like driving force with all the characters in the book and essentially saves the day.
Yeah.
Is that something as well, I think, to have, I guess, the motivations, like, what was, I think, again, with Iris being, for the most part, the star of the show, is that something where the end of the book is, you know, good intentions and selflessness are what saved the day, and I think even you, like, call that out, like who would have thought that, like, that is what actually did it, and it worked. Is that something you were going for kind of as the driving force of the book, is, you know, doing the right thing will save the day in the end?
Yeah, I definitely, you know, a lot of, I think, what I wanted to be the book about was, is Mason truly heartless? You know, like, he is maybe physically, but is he really, you know, like, emotionally and stuff? And so I think it's kind of about Mason discovering, like, that maybe he isn't really heartless. Maybe that's a bit of a spoiler. I don't know. But, you know, and stuff. And so I think that you, like, needed Iris to come in and be, like, have this, like, really big heroic act and stuff that made Mason, like, stop and, like, think about it for a minute. You know, and, like, I think there's a part, too, where she, like, calls him, like, says that they're friends or whatever, and maybe he's like never really had a friend or had somebody in his life who he has watched, you know, be really like kind and stuff, you know, because like the society was so terrible to him and stuff, and he just feels like so alone and stuff. And so I wanted, yeah, for him to like have kind of this moment of discovery, and maybe other people do too, like kids and stuff, of like, oh, like, you know, be the bigger person and stuff, because really Iris could have been like, okay, well, my sister's terrible, like my life would be so much easier without her, but like, you know, that wasn't the right thing to do and stuff. And I think that, you know, if it had just been Mason, he probably would have let the ghosts get her or whatever. But I think that was like a really eye-opening moment for him and stuff, of like, even if people treat you badly, like, you know, that doesn't mean that you should just totally turn your back on them and stuff. And I think, you know, Iris was originally just going to be in this book, and now she's in the sequels too and stuff. And I think that I kind of fell in love with that characteristic about her too, of just like, she is willing to see the good in everybody. And I think Mason, even if he won't say it, like really appreciates that about her too.
Yeah, and I think that sets up when you get to the end, and that's kind of, even if there was, never any more, I think, like, it's just the thought of them kind of going on adventures is really fun. And to that, as, as that progresses and you kind of move into other stories, do you have kind of a world built out for yourself as to, like, I mean, you touch on a lot of different, things that might be in the world, as for monsters and the paranormal, I mean, even allude to kind of the Beetlejuice-esque, like sandworms, which I love that page. Is that something you've kind of built out as you've gone on, like kind of where you might see them, or is kind of keeping them in these like contained stories something you want to do as you progress as well?
I think originally I had wanted to do kind of more like episodic contained stories, but that's definitely not how the second one is turning out. It kind of is definitely, I think, connected to the bigger world and stuff, and has kind of become like a bigger story. So it was definitely like when I started the second one, not really knowing where I was. Like, I have the ending in mind. Like, I know how the last book is going to end, but kind of what happened in between was a mystery to me, and still kind of is a little bit. But yeah, so it definitely, I think the expanded world is really fun, and I'm glad that I went that way, and I'm like really excited for people to see. It's gonna be a while, but where it goes, so for sure.
I think we've talked about it, and it was one thing that stands out, and I don't even know really if there's a question, more just like I think the kind of, I've referred to them as like set pieces, but there's so many moments in the book where either you pull back for the narration and there's those full pages or the splash pages or really unique things like the kind of dollhouse-esque like diagram that you have as they make their way back down. There's so many moments in the book like that that stand out. For you pacing the book, is that something you want to hit moments like that for you? Like, are those the images you have in your head and then kind of filling in between, or is that just something as you're pacing it and you come to those moments that was like, this would look the best, or are those really kind of the standout things and then working in between those?
Yeah, so after I had like written out the script and stuff, I kind of like I worked with my editor to be like, okay, not even really thinking too much about the story, but like this many pages should be comics, and then we should have like a big spread here, and then more comics, and then maybe just like a one page spread. So it kind of like, and we put it out on like a piece of paper and stuff so that we could like visualize like what all the pages would look like together, of like how that would work. And some of it got rearranged as you like put the story in, but it was just kind of like, how do we break up the comics with those bigger splash pages? And so there were like a few that I had in mind that I was like, okay, this has to be like a full page, like when they walk into the sister's room and everything's like flying around, I was like, that should be like a full page. Or when like the big ghost appears and stuff, I'm like, okay, you want readers to like pause for a moment and just like feel the impact of that happening. The dollhouse spread was really, really hard, and was the last spread that I worked on. It basically kind of came about because I had all this dialogue of Iris like asking all these questions and stuff, and you're like, how do you do that in an interesting way? And like make it make sense that they're like moving through the house and stuff. And so it was like, okay, what if I did this like kind of like cutaway of the house and stuff, and you could like see them moving, and that also gives you a sense in the rest of the book, like where they are in relation to like everything else, like the attic room in relation to like, like the room that they're in at the end, or Iris's room and stuff. And so that, kind of, so there was like some thought about like pacing, like, and it was hard because like in some of the comic pages and stuff, I'm like, man, I could really use like an extra page to, make sure I'm like pausing when I need to pause, or like really like focusing in on somebody if they're like saying something important. So it was, but I knew that I had to make room for like those bigger pages and stuff. So it was a struggle kind of to fit those bigger pages in and have them be in the right spot where they needed to be. So I'm kind of rambling there, but
No, and I think even one of the pages that really stand out to me in kind of the uniqueness to it is when we see his backstory, and it's like the page on all black, and so you have it kind of the images in like the circle cutouts, and obviously like gives room for the narration, which like in and of itself I think would be difficult on like a if you had that as a comic page, like to kind of fit that in, but then like the creativeness to have this design for it is so unique, and you have like the kind of like arteries branching out to it, and like I mean, obviously I think that would, I don't know, like would come in service of having that narration, but just like kind of like how you came up with that, I think is so unique, and obviously like kind of trial and error of making that work, but like that page in itself, just like being able to fit that, but still also have the visual narrative throughout that is really impressive.
Thank you. Yeah, that was kind
And
of
that's
a hard page because it was like, should these all be in like word balloons? Because this is kind of Mason talking and stuff. And yeah, so that was definitely a hard thing to work out. And we wanted it to be really different than when the ghost is telling their backstory, kind of. So like trying to make it visually look different from that backstory was definitely something that took a while to work out, but I think it hopefully turned out pretty okay.
is something I've always been like even with comics, we obviously do like a lot of the more like single issues floppies and stuff like that, and the kind of time you have to create that versus graphic novels is different, and then again especially kind of when you're working through a publisher, and I've always think back to I was watching kind of behind the scenes with Mo Willems. And he was, talking about the creation of one of the Pigeon books, which, if I don't know if anyone's familiar with it, obviously I have kids, so I'm very familiar
They're
with the
super
Pigeon
cute,
books.
yeah.
Yeah, I love, yeah, they're so adorable, and like they're funny, but so they're again very simplistic books. It's a very stick figure-y pigeon, and he wants to, drive a bus, and the narrator, the kids are saying no, and that's the whole stick, like, but. So, okay, like, oh, that looks, again, fairly simple. And then those, like, you were, like, in this video, you're watching him go through the amount of drafts he has. And, like, at this page, I didn't like the eye because, it was too aggressive. Or, like, and, like, he had so many notes and so many drafts and, like, the amount of work that went into crafting this. And you think, like, oh, that's why this book works. Like, it is a very simple book, but it, like, works on every level because there's like so much time and effort that went into think about everything on that page and where it was positioned and the tone, like everything, and like that's why something, again, something is, I don't know, it's simple, but like Doctor, like all that stuff works because it's there's so much time and thought and it goes into it. Like what it was, maybe not start to finish, but like something like this, like Mason Moon, like what was the time that went into like the full creation of this book.
Yeah, I mean, I've been working on some form of Mason Rooney for 4, almost 5 years now, which is really
Jeez.
crazy. Because I kind of did the synopsis for it for Flying Eye and stuff, and then took the break to do the Hilda books, and so that took a while, but I was always kind of working on Mason a little bit at a time. But then when I finally really started getting going, it was about a year, which it was not a lot of time, it felt like, for all the drawing and the colored penciling coloring, which is just so intense. Yeah, and I was editing it and stuff, even, which I think is a little bit uncommon, even when it was kind of in its final art stage and stuff. It would be like we would catch things or be like, ugh, this just isn't working, which, was probably my bad, honestly. But yeah, it went through a lot of different stages and phases and changes, and all within like a year. So it was an intense schedule for that book.
One, and it's something we see a lot in kind of the more published work. When you were finished, how long was it then till was your book pushed at all because of COVID, or were you still on schedule when it came out?
Yeah, I was still on schedule.
Okay.
I finished kind of just as COVID was getting started. So I think it was early April that I finished Mason Mooney. Yeah, and then I was like, oh, by the time Mason comes out, COVID will be over. It'll be fine. Yeah, didn't
Yeah,
happen.
we're
But
all through it. It's completely fine now through
yeah,
that.
it's fine.
How has that been for you this, I mean, kind of your first and longest release for this? What has that been like? Not only it out there now, but again, I think the added enjoyment of, again, it being an all ages book, you get to see kind of all ages really enjoy. What has that been like for you?
Yeah, it's definitely been exciting. I mean, with COVID and stuff, it's not what I was expecting. I recently, just until recently, worked at a comic book store. And so, like, me and my boss were like, we're going to have this, like, big party and it's going to be so fun. And, like, yeah, that didn't happen. And I think you mentioned, like, I read it for the Green Bean book story time and stuff. And I was like, oh, I wish I was here with, like, kids and getting to see, like kids react to stuff. So that has been a bummer, but I think one of the good things about being able to do all of this stuff over the Zoom is like you get to reach a lot more people than like you would otherwise. A lot of more people get to like watch those events, which is pretty cool.
What was, and I mentioned that was a lot of fun when I watched it with my sons. What was that like? One, which I think is always interesting, like, I think looking at Mason and reading him, I don't know, I pictured him British, but obviously, I mean, I wouldn't do the voices if he was, but I've done at Barnes and Noble when prior to COVID and all this stuff, they used to have like story times on the weekends, and occasionally got like roped in to doing that, which is like super stressful. Like, it's really, kids are a really hard audience. And I was like, but then the nice thing is they can't, most of them can't read, so you can tell. I was just like, if I screw up, but what was that like? Is that something that was stressful or you're looking forward to kind of doing?
It was definitely stressful. I will give a lot of credit to my really good friend and roommate, Michelle, who edited that video for me and edited all my mess ups and stuff that I did for it. He probably is British, I would say. Like if you look at his little uniform and stuff, but I definitely wasn't gonna do a British
Didn't do a
accent.
British voice, no. Yeah, that's why kids are always like, do voices. I was like, they don't pay me to do voices. Before kind of wrap up for questions, like you mentioned it, but a little bit, like what is like what, and that's really early. Like what do you see kind of the adventures for them being in the future? Like what would your ultimate goal be for the series as a whole?
Well, yeah, I mean, I really have made these. I know this sounds like kind of phony, but I really did make these books for myself. And, it's like pretty amazing that my job is that I get to like draw my favorite stuff ever. I just really love making them and hope people love reading them. And I want them to reach the audience that's going to love them mostly, which is Doing kind of this stuff is a little bit embarrassing for me because I'm just like, I just want to be in my pajamas drawing Mason Mooney. But yeah, I just hope it gets out there to people that'll love it. And yeah.
Yeah, and before I'll ask a seasonal question, but like I said, I absolutely adored it. We talked about it before we started recording. Part of I'm always like afraid to do, and why I have a co-host, because with like artists, I would just be like asking about every single panel, and like it's so like you do so many amazing things in this book. Like even there's so many like angles you take in panel. I love like there's like Dutching. Like it's okay, there's so much stuff that goes into it. Like it's an amazing book. It's so much fun. Like it is funny. The characters I love. Like I just am very excited for more. And I talked about like books like fantasy sports, which I think are like the standouts in books that like anyone of any age could read and just like absolutely love. Like they're like the I don't know like Studio Ghibli, like where they're just books and movies for everyone. Like there's just and I think that is very hard to do. I think it's harder to do than very specific niche stuff. And like I think this is amazing, and I look forward to more of it. And again, hopefully people are picking up. I know I've put it in two hands so far at the bookstore, so I'm very excited.
Oh, thank you so much. That's so good to hear. That's awesome.
Yeah, which like again, kids are probably very annoyed with me or parents. I'm like, can I have these books? But I'm very excited. And so this episode will go up the week following Halloween, but since it is a little spooky book and we're in the midst of we're recording the week of Halloween, what are some of your favorite Halloween movies?
Oh man, so many.
Tough question.
I'm actually, it's really fun. I'm here visiting my family in Wyoming kind of for the holidays and stuff. And I have a 14-year-old brother, and so I'm making him watch all my favorite scary movies. But so, like, we're watching Evil Dead 2 and The Gate, Lost Boys, definitely, like, all that kind of good, like, 80s silliness. Yeah, so.
Nice. Those are. What's the. Oh, that's a weird question. I just asked because. So, I don't know. How old am I? 32. And I have a 16-year-old brother. I have a huge age gap between. It's like me and my sister. And then my parents got divorced. And then my mom remarried later on. So I have like a 15, no, 16-year-old brother and a 14-year-old brother. Which is interesting. It was like a great contraceptive growing up because I was like, these kids are horrible. Like, oh, never mind. But at the same time, like, it's been super fun to, like, again, introduce, like, have a younger brother that young, introduce him to stuff. Probably too young. I remember he was like a baby and we were watching, like, Step Brothers. I was like, this is hilarious. And he would, like, call me and be like, I'm gonna punch you when you're sleeping. But anyway, has been the joy, especially because you can't do that. I mean, I can do that stuff with my kids, but I have to like joint parent with somebody. For anyone that wanted to find your stuff, obviously, like I said, Mason Mooney is out in stores. You can get it online, all the major retailers and stuff like that. But if you're able to go out to a bookstore safely with mask and all that stuff, again, as someone who works in a bookstore 1 to 2 days a week, please wear a fucking mask. Like.
Right.
It's insane the amount of people
Wear
that need to tell to put a mask on. But what's the best way people can get hold of you or find your stuff?
Yeah, you can go to my website. My email is on there, so you can always email me something, or you can find me on Twitter or Instagram. It's pretty easy to find me because my name is spelled so weird. It's SEAERRA. So just Google that and I'll be there.
We again, it's a cool name. I also enjoy because it's phonetic, and I was like, that's so smart. Because I'm always like, again, prior to doing recordings, I'm always like looking up people. Like, just I'm like, there's gotta be a video somewhere where they say their name or someone talks to them, and hopefully that's right. But so if you spell your name phonetically, it's great. You have so for comics, like obviously the Hilda books, and you have this. So, like, if anyone wants, goes to the website, there are great comics on there. Have you, I know some of them are published in anthologies. This is the only other stuff kind of that's been out there is anthology work. I love the voting one. That's hysterical.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
stuff. So has it just been the kind of two anthologies outside of the Hilda stuff?
I'm actually working on another comic right now for Little Brown Young Readers that's going to be a bigger, a little bit more serious graphic novel about a girl and her dad who take a road trip to Roswell, New Mexico, because he thinks he's been abducted by aliens and that the aliens have told him that they want to meet him there.
Was that the preview that's on there, or the?
So the original comic was just like a little comic I did for an anthology, and they got a hold of me and they're like, "Would you ever want to make this into a book?" I was like, "Yeah, definitely." So, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. That's exciting. Yeah, like you said, obviously go pick this up. Go support everything. Oh, I'm always forget. I guess you can listen to, well, it's weird. If you're listening to the show, you know where to find the show. We're on Twitter at pages_panels. We do a comic book club monthly. I don't know. It's you don't stumble on, it'd be like the weirdest podcast to stumble on. It's a comic book podcast, so that's not a surprise. But the most important thing is picking up Mason Mooney. Like, I adore it. I have two copies, one for my son and then one for him. For him to never touch. But again, thank you so much for taking the time and listening to me ramble about how amazing your book is.
Thank you so much, and thank you for saying such nice things about it. This was really fun.
No problem. And next time, Tim will be here and we will definitely be covering the George Lopez show.